You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Nick Watts from The Lancet agreed to an interview for Radio EcoShock, but he was away at the Bonn Climate Talks. I tried to nab him right after, but got an email back saying Nick was now in remote Nepal with no phone connection. He recommended the Climate Countdown Program officer, Nicola Wheeler, and here she comes.
Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Has your doctor talked to you about the health risk of climate change? According to one of the world's leading medical journals, she or he should. It's all in a big new report called The Lancet Countdown 2017. The British-based publication The Lancet has organized a global body of doctors, scientists, and public policy experts to calculate where we are now, on the road to either climate tragedy or survival. From the University College London, we've reached The Lancet Countdown Project Officer Nicola Wheeler. Nicola, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Well, of course, to let listeners know why this matters, we do have to begin with at least one dire projection from the 2017 report. Could you give us a snapshot of increasing heat?
Yeah, of course. So one of the indicators that we look at is exposure to heat wave among vulnerable populations. That's people over 65 years old who are especially vulnerable to the health effects of heat waves. And what we find is that already since the year 2000, 125 million additional people are being exposed to heat waves. And in 2015 alone, this was 175 million additional vulnerable people that were exposed to heat waves just in 2015 alone.
That's hundreds of millions of people exposed to heat waves more than previously. What did the Lancet project find out about the loss of labor productivity?
Yeah, so we looked at rural populations that were exposed to changing temperatures. And between 2000 and 2016, we found that people's capacity to do labor and to do labor activities productively had decreased by 5.3% just in those 16 years.
Sometimes factories have to shut down due to heat and other factors. What about the lost productivity in manufacturing and other sectors? Is something being done to gather that data?
Yeah, it's a really good point, and it's something that we really are looking to capture next year. We're already developing our 2018 indicators, looking at how we can improve our existing ones, and even any new indicators to capture information that we haven't yet presented in 2017. And in terms of labor capacity, things like that, like manufacturing, building work, that's all something that we're hoping to build into the report next year.
I was struck by the doctor's view of climate change as a medical issue. Despite the continuing work by The Lancet, we have not heard enough about this. Most of us are not yet hearing it from our doctors. Why not?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And we are increasingly hearing from doctors about the risks of climate change to our health. But you're right, it's not enough yet. That's kind of why this project is so important, is improving our understanding of how climate change is affecting our health and enabling doctors to bring that information to their patients. You know, doctors are a really powerful advocate for health issues. I mean, tobacco is a brilliant example of that. But ultimately, they need really good, solid evidence in order to back the agenda and to explain to patients and to policymakers why climate change matters and why it matters to our health.
Well, it's almost like tobacco. I mean, people are dying about it, so we need to talk about it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Before we go further, what is The Lancet and why is the medical community reporting on climate change?
Sure. So The Lancet is the world's leading independent general medical journal. It aims to improve physicians' clinical practice and their knowledge by bringing novel and innovative research on medical issues directly to physicians. So if you go to any kind of hospital, any doctor's office, they will have a copy of The Lancet in there. So it's a fantastic way to get directly to doctors and to explain these issues to them. In terms of why The Lancet is interested in climate change, it's recognized for a while now the kind of huge threats that climate change poses to human health, but also conversely that if we address climate change, the opportunities that that has for improving health globally. So it's been doing this for quite a few years, like I say. It launched its first kind of detailed research project into health and climate change back in 2009. And since then, it's just been building and building on this agenda. And that's where we've landed now with The Lancet Countdown, where The Lancet is now supporting us to every year report on these health and climate change indicators to really build on that evidence year on year.
When was The Lancet founded?
It was founded back in the 1800s. So it's been around for a couple of hundred years now.
Right. It's one of the originals. So science suggests that Hurricane Maria was a natural disaster made worse by climate change, especially warming seas adding to storm strength. How do you see the collapse of hospitals in Puerto Rico in light of your 2017 Lancet report?
Yeah, I mean, really, that disaster just highlights why we need to be looking at this issue and why health systems, they need to be prepared. They're currently, a lot of health systems are very ill-prepared for disasters such as Hurricane Maria. And ultimately, they need help. They need climate forecasting so they can anticipate and plan for these climate-related disasters. They need climate-resilient infrastructure, so when their power systems go down, they have backup generators to ensure they can continue, you know, delivering healthcare, basic healthcare. And ultimately, they need the resource and capacity to undertake all of this work. But I think a really important point, I mean, this all sounds like it costs a lot of money and it's going to be a huge burden on the health system. Actually, it's not. These all are good, common-sense things to do regardless of climate change. All that climate change is doing is just is making these issues more urgent. It's highlighting why health systems need to be prepared for these kind of events.
And what about emissions from the healthcare sector itself? Are they significant and what could be done to reduce them?
Yeah, they are significant. And I think there's kind of two primary reasons why we want to look at the emissions from the healthcare sector. The first is related to your earlier question of why doctors should be advocates on this. And ultimately, if doctors are talking about climate change impacting human health, the health sector as a whole needs to demonstrate that they're behind it and they're doing their part to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions. The second issue is, yes, the health sector, they are a significant contributor themselves. If you look at the US health sector emissions, they alone are greater than the entire greenhouse gas emissions from the UK and represent sort of nearly 10% of US emissions. So these are big numbers we're talking about here.
Many of us dread the spread of tropical diseases like dengue fever to the United States or Europe. But this Lancet report adds a hidden burden of non-communicable diseases increasing under climate stress. Please take a little time to tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. It's a really good point, and it's one that we are hoping to do a lot more work in, actually, in 2018 and the years going forward to highlight just how much climate change can impact non-communicable diseases. A great example is looking at air pollution. Air pollution is related to climate change in kind of two key ways. So the first of which is that air pollution results from the burning of fossil fuels. When coal is burnt, it releases greenhouse gas emissions, also reduces particulate matter and other really nasty chemicals, which really exacerbate local air pollution. And we see that all over the world. And the second issue is that as our climate warms and we are exposed to more heat waves, that also worsens local air pollution. So you see a rise in ozone levels, which has really severe effects on human health. Kind of in terms of non-communicable diseases, the main things we see are things like lung cancer, really, you know, severe illnesses, which ultimately can result in people dying.
Yes, last week we talked with Camilo Mora from the University of Hawaii, and he'd done some research into heat effects on the body. And he said that a lot of organs can be affected, including, I think he said, the liver. And then the person can die years later from the heat wave that happened.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So one of the things you do see with heat waves is their bodies become stressed. Their bodies function best at their core temperatures, which is 37.5 degrees. And as soon as heat rises above that and it's stayed above that, bodies, they can't cope. They can't maintain their core body temperature and they can't cool down ultimately. And one of the effects you see, for example, is kidney disease. People become dehydrated and their kidneys, they cannot function as they should.
Well, these days we hear less about mass famine, but doctors do warn about undernutrition. Nicola, what is that and how does climate change play into undernutrition?
Yes, undernutrition in the most basic sense is when people simply cannot get enough nutritious food to live a healthy lifestyle. In terms of climate change, ultimately, climate change can affect the food security of people. And we see this most commonly in low and middle income countries where people are more reliant on subsistence farming. So, you know, growing their own food and they don't have the option of importing food from other countries. It's all very locally produced. And what we see in the paper is that between 1990 and 2016, the number of undernourished people has increased by 24 million. And this is in countries that are particularly vulnerable to climate change, so where we're seeing increased drought, increased heat waves, and in places where people are already particularly vulnerable to undernutrition itself. And also, these are in places, like I say, where they are dependent on local regional food production.
And I was surprised to read in the countdown that doctors are concerned about the statistics of red meat production and consumption. Why is that?
Yeah, so there's kind of two reasons for that, really. The first is related solely to the production side. So the livestock sector is a huge contributor to greenhouse gas emissions globally. It's about 14%. And of that 14%, cattle production alone is responsible for 65%. So these are, in itself, in the production, it's a huge contributor to climate change, but also in terms of consumption of red meat. Although it can be an important source of protein for some populations, overeating red meat actually poses quite a few significant health risks to people.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith from University College London. My guest is Nicola Wheeler. She's the program officer for a huge running project by the leading medical journal, The Lancet. The medical community is tracking climate threats. Nicola, I'd like to pick up on one unusual item in this report, the possibility of ice crash disasters flooding out the billions of people who currently live in coastal cities. What is the warning in the report?
The warning essentially is that we need to be doing more. If we don't significantly mitigate climate change and if we don't put in place adaptation systems that enable people to live in their current environments and protect people against sea level rise, potentially, yeah, we are talking about a billion people that could be forced to leave their homes. I mean, this is, I would like to stress, under circumstances where there is no adaptation in place and, you know, under kind of very bad climate projections. But it's possible, and we're seeing it today. Already people are being forced to leave their homes. In Fiji, they're having to relocate coastal villages to higher land. In Alaska, we see 3,500 people already having been forced to migrate because of changing ice conditions. They simply cannot live where they used to live.
You know, it's just occurred to me it might be helpful for The Lancet to do an inventory of hospitals that would have to move if we had 1 or even 3 meters of sea level rise. Recreating a hospital is not easy or cheap. Would that be worth investigating, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And sea level rise is in itself something that we don't actually have an indicator on at the moment. But like I said, we are looking to expand these indicators and to improve them. So, yeah, that could be certainly something that we look into in future.
Nicola Wheeler, why are doctors calling for a total phase out of coal?
Coal is really important. If there's one thing you can do to quickly help mitigate climate change and to vastly improve populations' health around the world, it's phasing out coal. In terms of climate change, coal is responsible for 44% of carbon dioxide emissions globally. And it's also, as we discussed before, it's a major contributor to local air pollution. It emits a lot of particulate matter, which can have really severe pulmonary and cardiovascular health effects upon people.
And yet, it's still being burned in Europe, for example.
It is. It is still being burned. We are seeing positive signs of progress. We last week had the announcement of the Coal Alliance, who are committing to phasing out coal. And we have seen that coal production and investment has peaked. So there are positive signs that we are beginning to move away from this outdated, dirty source of energy. But you're right, we're not there yet, and we need to do more.
I'm sorry, I missed the first thing that you said. An announcement of what?
So the Coal Alliance is a group of countries, including the UK and Canada, who have come together and committed to phasing out coal by 2030.
That would be good. I didn't even know Canada was a part of that, so I'm glad to hear that. I'm from Canada. Has there really been an increase in extreme weather events, or is it just better TV coverage?
There has been an increase, yeah. We find that there's been about a 46% increase in extreme weather events since 2007. Part of that could be down to better reporting, but really since 2007 we've had pretty robust sort of reporting and monitoring systems in place. So that's a huge increase in just 10 years.
According to this report, though, despite the floods and the fires and the heat waves, there's no obvious increase in people dying. Could you explain why?
Yeah, sure. We were quite surprised to find that, to be honest. With such a huge increase in the number of extreme weather events, we really thought there'd be a more kind of discernible trend in the number of deaths. But to date, there isn't. However, there are huge and very significant limits to adaptation. So what we think is happening is that at the moment, our response systems are sufficient. We're just able to cope with these extreme weather events. However, that's not going to be able to continue. As these, you know, if these weather events continue to increase at the rate that they have in the past 10 years, we need to significantly upscale our response systems and we need to make huge adaptation efforts in order to ensure that the number of deaths don't increase in future.
Yes, I think the report does use a medical analogy about this limit to adaptation. I mean, our body can adapt to a certain amount of influx of disease or a virus or something, but at a certain point, we can't cope with it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, our bodies are only able to take so many hits, if you like, and ultimately it gets to a point where it can't recover. And these systems are exactly the same. If you are dealing with an emergency response system that is constantly or frequently having to deal with these extreme weather events, ultimately it's going to fall apart. It's not going to be able to deal with those anymore.
And the report suggests that despite some signs of climate action, which are discussed there, we still face warming of 2.6 degrees to 4.8 degrees C by the end of the century. The first is kind of a disaster. The second is definitely a catastrophe. And yet there are several very optimistic passages in this report, including in the conclusion, that seem to clash with those odds. How is that possible?
Yeah, you're right. It is. It's very concerning. And the thing that we highlight is that it's in the last 5 years only that we've seen this kind of increased response to climate change. So, for example, we've seen commitments to new coal power plants have halved just in 2016 to 2017. We've seen that since 2015, in every single year since 2015, there's been more renewable energy added to the global mix than all other sources combined. However, when we look at the big picture, in the last 25 years, our progress has been embarrassingly slow. We're really not doing enough to address this, and that's why we say, although there's kind of glimmers of hope, if you like, that in the last 5 years we're beginning to do more, and perhaps this is the start of a transition to a low-carbon world, we're not there yet, and we need to do an awful lot more in order to meet the Paris Agreement goals of, you know, keeping global temperatures below 2 degrees, let alone 1.5 degrees.
Well, as you said, the 2017 Lancet Countdown report also suggests that low- and middle-income countries will be hit hardest. But isn't that partly because population is expanding in regions that are already climate stressed?
It is partly to do with that. So the heat waves indicators that I mentioned earlier, a large portion of where those people are exposed is in India, where we see a huge rise in population. So it is partly due to that, but it's also partly due to, it just so happens that in countries that are least able to adapt, least able to cope with these extreme weather events, that's where these events are occurring.
You know, I think a lot of us think that with our good healthcare systems and with air conditioners, we're invulnerable to climate challenges. And do you think that people in developed countries are going to get a free pass?
No, absolutely not. We've already seen, so in Europe in 2003, over 70,000 people died during that summer when there was one of the most severe heat waves that's ever hit the continent. And quite simply, the health systems, they weren't prepared for it. They'd never dealt with anything like it before. And although they are, you know, they're starting to implement systems that are in place, ultimately they're going to have to deal with a lot more than just the occasional heat wave. And our results, we look at our countries implementing projects to improve their climate resilience. And actually we're finding that the majority are not. Health systems simply aren't ready to cope with climate change. And actually that's not just the case in low and middle income countries. That really is the case in high income countries too.
Could you help us understand how this report fits in context with ongoing work by The Lancet and a view of how all this will be followed up in the future? What is the plan and the process?
Sure. So in terms of The Lancet Countdown, we will be re-evaluating these indicators every single year between now and 2030. And what that will enable us to do is to every year build on this evidence of not looking 10, 20, 50 years in the future of how climate change is affecting the health of populations, but actually today, how it is already affecting human health. In terms of the broader picture of what the Lancet is doing, the Lancet is increasingly looking at not just climate change, but also this concept of planetary health, so how the health of humans is influenced by every environmental determinant.
But that is a huge project to keep track of all these indicators. How do you do it?
Yeah, so we have over 24 partners globally from every continent around the world. You know, we're working with the best people in the world, with experts from geographers, from climate modelers, economists, doctors, kind of every discipline you could think of, really. When we say it's multidisciplinary, we really do mean it.
This is almost like the Intergovernmental Panel reports, except that it's coming from the medical community.
I mean, that's very kind of you to say, yeah. I mean, it'd be wonderful if we could be something like that.
So how can people read this report for themselves or refer their doctors to it?
Sure. So you'll be able to find it on the Lancet website, or alternatively, you can go to www.lancetcountdown.org, and on that website, there'll be a link to the report.
And anybody can read it?
Anybody can read it. It's free to read.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about, Nicola?
I suppose one other final thing to maybe say is that we have also, alongside this main global report, we've produced a series of national policy briefs. So what these policy briefs do is that they look at, in particular countries, for example, the US, they draw out indicators that are particularly relevant to that country, and they tell that national story, and they provide policy recommendations for those countries. And they're also available on that website. So that's another great resource if you want to know more about these issues.
We've been talking about climate and health, the big picture, from the medical community called The Lancet. Our guest is Project Officer Nicola Wheeler. Nicola, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Not at all. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Here is a simple action you can take to help the planet a little bit. Please send a link to this radio program to your doctor, or a link to one of these interviews. There are the links to help you do just that in my weekly show blog, that's published every Wednesday at ecoshock.org. Tell your doctor, climate change isn't healthy for anyone. It kills. Thank you for listening to Radio EcoShock, and please join us again next week.